The following is a paid program.
It's time to talk UK sports with the voice of the Wildcats, Tom Leach. This is the Leach Report Radio Network. Join in the discussion by tweeting your questions to at Leach Report or email leachreport@gmail.com. And you can call 877-904-1080. Now, along with an outstanding lineup of guests and broadcast to the most passionate fan base in America, the Big Blue Nation, here's the voice of the Wildcats, Tom Leach.
Hello, everybody, and welcome in. Snowy Monday edition of the Leach Report as we have moved into March now. So it seems like that's when we're getting our winter these last couple of years. And hopefully you'll stay safe if you're out driving around today. Doesn't appear to be too bad, at least here in central Kentucky. And coming up on the show today, Kyle Tucker in the house from The Athletic. And we will talk about Kentucky's thumping by Tennessee down in Knoxville, and look ahead to the final week of the regular season. Curtis Birch will join us a little later. He was there covering the game as well, so he'll talk about some of the post-game sound from the Cats and the Vols as we move into the home stretch of the regular season, and next week we'll be talking about the SEC tournament. So, fun times. Our show is always served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington, the guest lineup presented by Sleep Outfitters. If you want to interact with us, question or a thought about the game or the Cats, tweet them to at Leach Report or email leachreport@gmail.com, or you can give us a call. Wildcat News of the Day is a service of Cardinal Point Financial Group, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services. Tennessee beats Kentucky 71-52 as a season low in points, season low 32% field goal percentage for the Wildcats. 26% is what they shot on threes, and that's what they've averaged in the five losses. So that's been one common theme in the five games that Kentucky has lost, the inability to hit the outside shot. Jordan Bone was best player on the floor, 27 points, zero turnovers. Paint, we'll get into this in our discussion here with Kyle a bit, but Kentucky's outscored in the paint 28-10, almost a complete reversal from what happened in Lexington. 13 field goal attempts combined in the last two games for P.J. Washington. So Tennessee did a very nice job on a guy that really killed them here in Lexington. Keldon Johnson, Tyler Hero struggled with their shots, a combined 4 of 20 from the field. So we'll get through all of the game here in just a bit. A couple of other quick notes. Keon Brooks has set his decision date. Kentucky, Indiana, Michigan State, who will it be? March 15th is when we'll find out, Friday night of the SEC tournament at 8 Eastern time. NFL, the combine news yesterday was good for Josh Allen and for Jordan Jones, who had some really good numbers. C.J. Conrad, of course, was one of the big stories on Friday. Didn't get to do his scheduled workout when some of the testing discovered some heart issue for C.J., so keep him in your prayers. And a lot of times these things come up with the intense screening that they do there, and it's something that's, when they haven't seen it before, then they obviously are going to err on the side of caution. So hopefully it is all taken care of for CJ. UK women got an important win yesterday at Georgia. Came from behind in the fourth quarter to win 58-53, so they finished 24-6 and 11-5, and they will play Friday at 2:30 Eastern time in the women's SEC tournament. They'll either play against 5-seed Missouri, 12-seed Ole Miss, or 13-seed Florida. And Austin McGinnis, 4 of 4 in his AAF debut, including the game winner for Memphis. No surprise, right? Hopefully this stint in the AAF will lead to another shot in the NFL for Austin. Links to the stories that we talk about can be found on the Bud Light Leach Report page at TomLeachKY.com. Oh, need to mention the Tito's Vodka Race of the Week. We talked about this on Friday. Told you I liked Code of Honor for an upset, and he got home at like $21 in the Fountain of Youth Stakes. The favorite, Hidden Scroll, got caught up in a fast pace, still held on to finish fourth, so really ran pretty well and ought to really benefit from that. So Code of Honor, Bourbon War was really running late. You could make the case he was the best horse in the field, but didn't have quite as good a trip. Code of Honor, though, gets the win in the Fountain of Youth on the road to the Kentucky Derby. So it'll be fun to see Shug McGahey back in the Derby. This one's owned by Bill Farish. So familiar connections around these parts. Links to the stories that we talk about, again, on the Bud Light Leach Report page at TomLeachKY.com. We'll be right back with Kyle Tucker from The Athletic on the Leach Report.
This is the Leach Report on Talk Radio 1080. You can follow Tom on Twitter. It's at Tom Leach KY.
Kyle Tucker from The Athletic here for our Basketball Monday segment of the Leach Report. Curtis Birch will be with us a little bit later, too. You can read Kyle at theathletic.com, and he and Curtis do the Locked On Kentucky podcast Mondays through Fridays. And you and I were just talking off the air that this was not a game where a loss at Tennessee was going to be any kind of surprise. And that would have been true even if Reed Travis were healthy. I mean, really good team playing at their place. But the way that it happened was a little surprising, maybe, right?
Yeah, I mean, I thought all along it was going to be home team split, you know, and I think that would have been the case even if Reed Travis was healthy. But obviously, with Reed being out, I think it made it much more of a challenge. Certainly made it harder on PJ Washington. I mean, he was the guy who freed PJ up to do so much in the first meeting. It's just rare that you see two really good teams with such dramatically different results 2 weeks apart. 17-point win in Knoxville, where Lexington, where Kentucky led by as many as 24, and then a game where, if the last dunk counts, they lose by 21 2 weeks later. But I don't take a ton out of that. I mean, there are some concerns beyond what problems were caused by not having Reed Travis. The guard play, the defensive guard play, the offensive guard play was bad. But I do think that Reed Travis really does change everything for them. I mean, it does affect the guards. I mean, having his presence down there in the paint.
Cal talked about that line he uses about playing for yourself versus playing for us, that kind of theme. And if you looked at the schedule, or when you looked at the schedule when Reed went down, you figured, okay, Auburn's a perimeter-oriented team, should be fine there, and it's at home. Next game, you got Gafford. That could be a little bit of a problem, but it is at home. And then you get to Tennessee, and you think, ooh, there's where his absence is really going to show up. Well, it played out exactly like that. And players can look at the same thing we look at. And if you're Tyler, if you're Keldon, if you're Ashton, if you're Emmanuel, all these guys, you think, okay, I got to do a little more.
Yeah.
Because we don't have Reed. And that's where that can I can see where that can play out that way.
Yeah, you know, and that's where I think you see Tyler Hero and Keldon Johnson, a combined 4 for 20, 1 for 10 from 3. That's where that shows up. But what what I can't figure out, if you're trying to do more and extra, is why nobody defended anybody.
Yeah. I think it's human nature when you think do more, that means score.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah. And you know, Calipari's talked about this too, you know, defensive confidence affecting offense and vice versa. If you're getting torched on the other end, you're not going to be confident shooting the ball and vice versa. But, I mean, goodness gracious, Jordan Bone just absolutely wrecked them. 27 points on 15 shots. He made all 5 threes, and he didn't have a turnover. I mean, he didn't have – I can't think of more than one or two times where he was remotely hassled, sped up.
Just owned the game.
Bothered at all.
Yeah, he completely controlled, did everything he wanted to do, got where he wanted to go.
And they got – I mean, if you told me going into it that Admiral Schofield be 3 for 13 and 0 for 6 from 3.
Yeah, only two guys in double figures. Game,
I mean, literally two guys beat him. Almost two guys almost outscored him.
That's true.
Schofield and Williams had 51. Kentucky had 52.
Yeah, that's a –
Jody Meeks had 54. Jody Meeks, 10 years ago, yeah, scored more by himself than Kentucky did Saturday in Knoxville.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have, you know. And Grant Williams ended up with a nice line. He did a lot of his damage late when it was already a wide margin. I mean, Jordan Bone beat him.
Yes. Benny tweets in, what can Hagans do to be better on the ball? And I think it's – what is it in this particular matchup, do you think? Because Bone, I thought, got the better of him in Lexington.
Yeah, I don't know. I think some of it's gambling. You know, I think some of it is, like, is playing for steals and not playing for defense, just for the team concept of the defense. I mean, the fact that these guys are just going right by him now, I mean, he went by. It wasn't just him. They tried multiple defenders on the kid, and mm-hmm. nobody could seem to stay in front of him. One thing. I mean, let's give Jordan Bone some credit. He's really good.
He's having a great year,
leading the SEC in assists. You know, maybe establishing himself as a pro. He's really good, but you've got to be better than that. I mean, it was just a thorough beatdown. I don't know. I'm not a guru on what makes a guy a good on-ball defender or not, or how a guy goes from being pretty universally considered one of the best defenders in the country to lately being more off than he's been on.
Yeah.
And in the second half in the Arkansas game, he was the guy they dispatched on Joe, and I think he only scored 3 points on Higgins. So it's not like he hasn't played any good defense lately, but he's been too often letting guys go by him. And I think some of that is just being overly aggressive and gambling.
It'll be interesting if they could meet a third time in the SEC tournament in Nashville next week. And at the moment, it looks like it would be more likely to come in the semifinals on Saturday afternoon. And last year, Tennessee, of course, won both regular season games. By the time they got to the third matchup, which Kentucky won, Kentucky defended Grant Williams differently. You try different things. You go through the first game. Okay, that didn't work. Let's try this. That didn't work. So you finally figure, good coaches and staffs figure out ways. So it'll be interesting to see what Kentucky tries to do differently on Bone in round three, or if it's simply a matter of, you know, Ashton Higgins just – you know, elevating his defense on that particular day, whatever it might be. But it's going to be interesting to see if that matchup comes about, because he's the with Grant Williams, Schofield, all that talk, it's Bone's been the toughest matchup so far for Kentucky in the two games against Tennessee.
Yeah, and at some point, do you try a different, like, you know, do you use some zone? I know Cal hates that, but I mean, on Saturday, it kind of felt like maybe that's what they needed to do.
Maybe so.
I don't know. I don't know. I think Emmanuel quickly needs to play a little more.
Good to see him hit some shots. That should help him.
I think he's gaining confidence, and because of his versatility, I like the option there, because if Higgins won't defend or isn't defending, if Keldon Johnson and Tyler Hero or one or the other is playing selfishly, I think you got to give Ashton Higgins some more minutes.
Talk with Kyle Tucker from theathletic.com.
Quickly.
quickly, yes. We'll be right back. It's the Leach Report, served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington.
It's the Leach Report on Talk Radio 1080. Coming up next, it's Kentucky Sports Radio with Matt Jones.
Kyle Tucker from The Athletic is in the house. Had a great read on P.J. Washington late last week, leading into the Tennessee-Kentucky game we'll talk about here for a second, because it took a little bit of the edge off of it for the P.J. fans, I'm sure, with the way the game played out. Just Tennessee did a really nice job on him. But it was a good read, because you talked to his dad and others about the decision to come back and how it might change some thinking for college basketball players, perhaps.
Yeah, you know, and he's obviously struggled these last couple games, but I think that, again, that underscores the value of Reed Travis and how much pressure that takes off of PJ and attention and the way teams are able to defend him. I mean, they can double him anytime they want without Reed Travis. And if you double him when Reed Travis is in there, Reed Travis is going to score a bunch of points, because PJ has been very good at finding him. But you know, the story I wrote for The Athletic, I thought it was some really interesting, thoughtful points made both by Kenny Payne and PJ's dad. You know, PJ's dad, and if you want to, you know, think positively about his potential impact on the future, you know, PJ's dad said he talks to recruits' families when they ask, and one of those was Keon Brooks' dad, about the development piece at Kentucky. He said, you know, when you're on these visits, you need to be looking, who is the guy that develops, or do they have a staff that develops you? And he said, not everywhere does, but Kentucky does.
And PJ's dad's a coach. So
he was a coach, yeah, a high-level high school coach, former college player, high-level high school coach. He actually left his job coaching out in Nevada, coach PJ's team in Las Vegas, moved here and took a job as an assistant manager at a Lowe's in Elizabethtown and drove the hour and a half or so a couple times a week just to kind of be around PJ because he wanted to make sure he was focused, make sure that he wasn't feeling the way, he said, the weight of the state of Kentucky.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of pressure. So you just do laundry with him and hang out with him. I mean, this was a season about, you know, business. You know, like, you came back for a reason. Don't waste it.
Yeah.
And he hasn't. You know, and then I thought Kenny was really interesting. He said Kentucky basketball is better because PJ made an educated decision.
Amen to that.
I mean, that was, you know, and he said, I mean, I just thought some of these quotes were really, really good. I would hope that all our kids would do what PJ did and go through the process and make decisions based on the answer to this question. Did I come to Kentucky just to be one of the guys, or did I come to Kentucky to be a major, major guy? You know, I thought that was pretty interesting. And also PJ's dad acknowledging a thing that Cal brought up recently. He said that the biggest thing is peer pressure, seeing all the other guys go.
Yeah.
You don't want to be the one left behind. And it takes a certain kind of guy with a certain kind of family and support system to stand up to that peer pressure. I mean, it's hard.
Yeah, and the other side to that that you hope they would appreciate is that if you make this decision to not go with your friends now because you're not ready,
you'll be with them later. you'll stay with them in the league.
They'll
later.
Be asking you for tickets in 3 or 4 years when you're still in the league.
Right. Well, yeah, and that to that point, I mean, this is obviously a family that's smart and done its research.
Yeah.
Like the numbers. You know, he said, and this was a good point too, though. He said, like, first and foremost, I want to say not everybody's situation is the same.
Yeah.
Like PJ's family, he said, PJ's lived his whole life in the suburbs. And he said, who am I to tell parents who are struggling to pay the rent or keep the lights on
Fair point.
Their kids should go back to school and play for free when $2 or $3 million could change their whole life? But if you take the money out of it, he said, PJ still talks to Jared Vanderbilt and to Gary Trent, who's a one and done at Duke, and some other guys, and they're saying, I'm in the G League. You know, it's not very glamorous. I know you guys are flying on private jets and home by bedtime on road games, you know, and not happening in the G League. And the fact that, you know, if you're a second round pick, you may never play in the NBA. You may never get another contract. And after taxes and paying your agent and all this stuff, $2 or $3 million doesn't go that far.
Yeah, that's not life changing.
And if
money.
You come back, if you're a second rounder who comes back and turns yourself into a first rounder, you've made yourself $several million. Several million. I mean, PJ's case, he would have made about $3 or $4 million on a second round contract last year. And you know, the 14th pick, the last lottery pick, would get about $16 million over 4 years. That's a pretty big difference. And then the one other thing I thought was interesting, he said, go look at all the second round picks from last year and you tell me who's getting more national attention, them or PJ Washington. I mean, everybody's talking about PJ Washington. Is anybody talking about all the guys who went in the second round and are on two ways and bouncing around the G League? No, I don't think so.
You can go to theathletic.com and read that story. Subscription service, the benefits you get is that it's all the content. You don't deal with pop-ups, etc. For the trade-off of subscribing to theathletic.com to read Kyle's stuff and a lot of other great writers all around the country, different leagues, not just college basketball, obviously. Curtis Birch will join us when we come back. We'll talk some more about this game. Also get into a little discussion about seeding. We're less than 2 weeks away from Selection Sunday now. It's the Leach Report, served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington.
You're tuned to Talk Radio 1080 and The Leach Report. And visit TomLeachKY.com for more news and views on the Cats.
Second half of The Leach Report, served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington. Guests normally come to us on the Kentucky-branded hotline, but everybody's in studio on these Monday shows with Kyle Tucker from TheAthletic.com and then his partner Curtis Birch, who does the partner on the Kentucky Locked On Kentucky podcast. They air on wherever you find podcasts, when you do your podcast shopping, Kroger or wherever else. It is at the Locked On Kentucky podcast. Curtis was down in Knoxville, too, so always covering the post-game scene. Anything in particular that was noteworthy other than the technical issues out of the post game in Knoxville?
Well, the dripping water from the ceiling. Did you notice that, Kyle?
Oh, I heard feedback. I heard about feedback with the mic, so there's dripping water as well?
Yeah, and it wasn't like that there was
a leak.
It
wasn't a torture thing, was it?
I don't think so. And it wasn't like a leak. I think it was from an HVAC unit above that was kicked into overdrive with all the people in the arena. It was a disaster. I don't know if the video that I posted where, like, poor Nick Richards... They ran out of slots to plug in the microphones for the TV, and so some TV people had to put their regular microphones that they use, you know, when they're out reporting in the field, on the podium. And when Nick moved the in-house mic, it went over a TV mic, and there was just a monster amount of feedback. And I mean, I just feel bad for Nick Richards because he's in a situation where he's obviously not in a good mood because they just lost,
right?
And now he's dealing with this like loud screeching, and everybody's like looking at him like, and he has no idea. Yeah. I'm gonna venture to guess Nick Richards has no idea.
No concept of feedback.
Yeah. Well,
nor would most people.
He got some feedback from John Calipari, I'm sure, but like not in the sense of microphones. So just a really awkward situation when we kicked off that press conference.
I was trying to ask him a question, and it like literally was like Charlie Brown's teacher. Like I was talking to the microphone. And it would go, and I finally said some choice words that I hope weren't broadcast on live television, and just gave up on the mic and shouted out my question. But it was a disaster.
Yeah,
I guess fitting Kentucky fans. Yeah, the whole day was it, and it went south. We do a read on the post game. Curtis has heard this. It's a sponsored thing. The key play of the game, and I said it's when PJ picked up his second foul.
Yeah.
It was
yeah.
the key play of the game.
Yeah.
He went out. It was a one-point game. And, you know, at that point, it felt like Kentucky was just kind of hanging around. They hadn't played great yet, but they
were trying to get to the second half intact.
Yeah. And you make a run. You know, he went out. And he had been so effective lately was it just a case of the team kind of with Reed out and then PJ out? Then what do we do? Right. And everybody kind of splits rather than come together.
Well, yeah. I mean, those are the two veteran leaders.
Who you've been going through all year with your offense.
They are the two. I mean,
you've been an inside-out team all year.
Right. And so you've played through those two guys. Now neither of them is there. And I get Cal. I mean, Calipari's a strict two-foul guy.
Well, with his stars.
Yeah, well, I mean, you didn't have a lot of choice.
I like to make that note.
But yeah, I mean, because you're trying to protect your star player, you want to have him down the stretch, which is why when PJ's sitting and then EJ and Nick both get a third foul, that sort of like neuters them for the second half. Yeah. You know, I mean, they're going to play the rest of the game in fear of fouls. And you know, I think if you're Calipari, one thing about that, like it was eight and a half minutes, I guess, the final 8.5 minutes mm-hmm. of the second half. It's 1 point when he leaves. It's 13 points at halftime. But I think they were hanging on even for a while after that. Like for a good stretch, Tennessee was not making Kentucky pay.
Yeah, you know,
points, like with still like 4 minutes to go in the half.
You might roll the dice with PJ if they had opened up
immediately, gotten it to 10.
Yeah,
but like in my mind, I'm thinking if they stay within single digits, you'll take that.
And Baker hits that rainbow of a three with about a minute to go in the half to make it a 10-point game. You think
right.
At that point when he hit that, I thought if they get this to halftime at 10, they're in great shape.
Right, and I think that's kind of, I think Calipari just did not want to risk putting the one guy that he thought could help maybe lead him back in the second mm-hmm. half. In foul trouble, further foul trouble, you know, in retrospect, I think you probably would have preferred to put him back in for two or three more minutes. But if PJ does get that third foul, you're toast.
I mean, well, but I mean, he went the whole second half without picking up a foul,
sure.
So he would have been fine.
You can't know
in
that.
Theory.
He's been very foul. I mean, he's had a bunch of games where he's very, like, very, very, very foul prone.
One thing you see shot charts in the post game media notes package after a game. I don't know that anybody ever gives out a shot of where guys catch the ball, a chart of where guys catch the ball. If you did, I suspect that you would find way fewer catches on a block for PJ in these last two games.
Yes,
that teams have been intent on forcing him off there because they don't worry about having to pay a price for doing it.
Right.
that until
Arkansas made it plain. That was their whole game plan.
And I thought it was interesting when PJ would catch the ball, you'd have to go out maybe 10, 12 feet to catch it. When he would face the basket, Schofield was like a cornerback playing inside leverage to deny a slant. He wasn't letting him. He was on his inside hip.
He was going to force him to go left.
And then he was going to force him into a teammate, into a double team.
Yeah.
And because that guy's not worried about Nick or EJ, so he's going to double. Now, PJ, to his credit, handled that the way you would need to, through skip passes. Guys, they couldn't find anybody to make a shot other than quickly hit a couple.
Well, that's the thing, too. I mean, just there were open shots.
Mm-hmm. Tennessee gave you some because of that sacrifice that to play that way against PJ, but you got to make them.
And I mean, if Herro and Johnson are going to go 1-for-10 from three without Reed Travis in the game, and PJ being denied the block, it's over. I mean, you know, you're going to lose by 19.
Yeah.
So they did. I think game three will be a competitive game. I think we'll see one. I think it'll be in the SEC semifinals, and I think it'll be probably for a one seed. So, sign me up for that.
We'll talk about that. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back and get into that in a minute with Kyle Tucker from The Athletic. Curtis Birch, who joins him on the Locked On Kentucky podcast each week. This is the Leach Report. We're served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington.
Look for the Leach Report on Facebook. Show updates, contests, and other cool stuff. Check it out today.
Our Basketball Monday show here with Kyle Tucker from The Athletic and Curtis Birch. You hear on this show subbing for me from time to time with Dick Gabriel and the Big Blue Insider. And he and Kyle do the Locked On Kentucky podcast Mondays through Fridays that you can find where you find fine podcasts everywhere. We want to talk a little bit about seeding because Kentucky and Tennessee, I said in my open that whoever won was going to have the upper hand for a one seed on Selection Sunday. So I think that's Tennessee now. But the Vols do have to go to Auburn on Saturday. And then what about if it's Kentucky and Tennessee on Saturday, Kyle, in the SEC tournament? Is that a situation where the winner would get a one seed maybe?
Yeah, we had previously talked about this, you know, the scenario of if they met in the title game on Sunday, if they had split in the regular season. Normally, it feels like the committee doesn't really consider that game much because it's so close to when they're actually revealing the bracket. And at that point, it's like, we're not going to change it. But on Saturday, you don't have that excuse. We talk about, well, the league should move their title game to Saturday. Well, in some ways, you kind of feel like they are if Kentucky and Tennessee play. Because, look, LSU, take no credit for them. They beat both Kentucky and Tennessee. But they also only had to play each of them once, and they had by far the easier. And there's a reason they're not ranked ahead of either of these.
They're not going to be a one seed.
Their schedule wasn't good enough. So to me, like that's almost like the championship game getting moved to Saturday. Okay, well, now the committee has to consider it. They've got plenty of time to consider it. And I think it really could be for a one seed. And honestly, if Kentucky wins that, I don't know how you don't, if they don't stub their toe, you know, in these last two regular season games, how you don't give them a one seed because, or at least don't give Tennessee a one seed over them.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, Kentucky's got 8 top 25 wins in the KenPom rankings, and Tennessee's got 3. You know, as well as they played, and this was a little bit of a talking point when Kentucky kind of thumped them. Finally, people go, well, maybe there was something to the fact that they hadn't really played anybody. Because they won 19 straight games, but they'd gone like 2 months without playing a really good team. And you look at their top wins, they've got 3 top 25 wins. Louisville, Gonzaga, and Kentucky. And 2 of those wins were months ago.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Kentucky's beaten Carolina, Louisville, same team. They've beaten Auburn twice, Mississippi State twice, Kansas, and Tennessee. To me, if Kentucky beats Tennessee in the SEC semifinal to get to the SEC championship game and win these last two regular season games, they've got 10 top 25 wins. It'd be 11 top 50 wins. Actually, if they beat Florida, there'd be 12 top 50 wins and 10 top 25 wins in KenPom's rankings. Is that not a one seed?
Yeah, and I mean, the one thing the committee's kind of shown, and it's a little bit more evident when you get down to the end of the bubble than at the top line, but they value quality wins over just not losing,
right.
You know, when it comes down to it. And Kentucky would definitely have the advantage, as you just laid out, over Tennessee in that instance.
And that would also mean Tennessee'd have 4 losses, Kentucky'd have 5. I mean, that's negligible when you compare the wins.
And the other thing to keep in mind, and, you know, there was a little bit of social media kind of angst because one of Kyle's favorite follows, John Rothstein, tweeted out that the Duke losses without Zion wouldn't count. That isn't true, you know.
Right.
But it is factored in. And Kentucky's loss to Tennessee was without Reed Travis. So the committee, you know, they don't just go by the net rankings or these numbers. You know, they look at, like, they use the eye test and they factor in Kentucky was missing a key piece here. So that should help them in, you know, if it is like almost a tie or whatever.
Get, you know, if they get Reed Travis back and win
again. Yeah, exactly.
Like, okay, you could conceivably say they might have won with him in Knoxville, or at the very least, you just don't penalize that. Mm-hmm. I don't think they're going to penalize.
I don't think they're going to penalize
Tennessee or Kentucky for losing on the road to each other when they split the, you know, when they've split these meetings.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It wouldn't be a penalization. It wouldn't be a thing where they're getting dinged for it because they're not having Reed Travis is not an excuse, according to John Calipari,
right,
unless you're later in the press conference. But you know, I mean, it is kind of a reason, and you know, the committee will factor that in.
Yeah, it's definitely a reason. And when you look at this battle for one seeds, this week's interesting because Duke and Carolina play. And then Carolina's obviously playing really well now. The ACC's going to have 2-1
yeah.
seeds. I would think Virginia's the overall number one at the moment.
I would think. I don't care how many times they've won. Like, I just can't see giving it to Gonzaga over it with, what, two really spectacular wins.
But even if they do, from the standpoint of what
matter.
We're talking
they're
about,
gonna
they're going to be in the West.
Right.
So then if they were the overall number one, the big issue is that who's the overall two?
Right.
Is it Virginia or Duke?
Right.
Kentucky's going to, you know, you could certainly see a scenario where you could end up with Duke as the one seed in Louisville, Kentucky conceivably the two could play out. I don't know if it could happen, you know, somewhere else, some other region as well. It feels like at the moment there's going to be two ACC ones, and somebody from the SEC is going to be the other one,
yeah.
Kentucky or Tennessee, and then Gonzaga.
Yeah, I mean,
I don't know if anybody, nobody from the Big Ten. Michigan State lost to Indiana again, so they can't get it.
I know.
Houston lost. I mean, they didn't have a shot anyway. But
I know some Kentucky fans, many Kentucky fans, have said I'd much rather be a two in Louisville than a one anywhere else. But if the caveat is that the one is Duke,
ooh, buddy,
do you still feel that way? I mean, if you think you're going to have to beat Duke regardless, try to beat him in a home game.
Absolutely.
I mean,
yeah,
that would be.
But man, to get denied a Final Four by Duke would in Louisville would be.
But on the flip
most,
side,
I think I think the city of Louisville might just like fall in on itself.
But on the flip side, if you beat
but if you
Duke,
beat them, but yeah,
if you beat Duke in Louisville to avenge.
The Final Four and,
oh, buddy!
Then I think I would probably wear like a fire suit.
It's
that
like
game
a Kentucky
because I think the city and state might burn to the ground in celebration that night.
Be Kentucky, Indiana, 75. You know when Kentucky got the revenge on IU. That was in Dayton, and they said on the ride home from Dayton, everywhere that you know the overpasses in
people
Kentucky,
were hanging over
were hanging on the overpass.
I mean, I think it would be. Oh man, I think it would be one of the all time celebrations in this state if they avenge the loss to Duke in Louisville in the Elite Eight to go to the Final Four. Now, that'd be a tall order, and after what I saw Saturday in Knoxville, I'm not supremely confident that could happen, but I would sure like to see it. I mean, for my purposes, I hope it's Kentucky, Duke, and Louisville to go to the Final Four. But, I think John Calipari might also just prefer to be the one in the Midwest and,
absolutely,
you know, get to the Final Four.
And then take your shot there.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's significant to get to
you
a Final Four.
You want to be in the Final Four. And Kentucky has gone a whole 3 years without one.
If they had not been in Carolina's bracket in 17, they'd probably have had another Final Four banner.
Yes, the death region. I mean, that was a crazy region.
That was ridiculous. that was an unbelievable game.
They go through Wichita, then UCLA, then Carolina?
Yeah, and everybody, UCLA was the trendy pick to win the national championship before the tournament started because they were playing so well.
Yeah.
That's Curtis Birch, Kyle Tucker's alongside, and we're going to take a break, come back for our final segment. It's the Leach Report. We're served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington. Welcome back into our final segment of the Leach Report, served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington. Question from a listener, Bluegrass Recruiting, tweeting, do you think there will ever be a no DQ on fouls in college basketball? I don't think we'll get to that point.
Six foul, maybe? I don't
That's something that's talked about. I wouldn't I wouldn't mind that one. Just as a, you know, as a fan watching games, if guys could have three a half, you'd keep the best players on the floor more. I would like that as a fan. But
yeah, I think you more want to penalize, you know, in the scoring of the game, the fouling. You know, like make the impact free throws, not taking the best players out of, you know, yes. what I mean, not taking the best players out of the game. I hate mm-hmm. that.
Yeah. And then there's somewhere I read recently, and I can't remember where, but they're talking about they won't go to quarters for men's college basketball like they did for the women's game, but they would reset the fouls at 10 minutes.
Right.
Which they don't want to lose a media timeout by going to quarters. So
how would they do that? They're just like in the middle of the, like, if what if is, I guess it's the next stoppage of play after the 10-minute mark. Is
what, well, that's what I wonder too. It's like, you know, if you're crossing mid-quarters or reaching foul and it's 9:59.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I don't know.
Is it at 10 minutes or is it at the timeout closest to 10 minutes?
That'd be a weird situation. But I'd be for that too, because, I mean, that's the main complaint I have with halves is the fact that you can get in the bonus so early and it just drags on when you get to the end of either a game or the first half.
No, I think that's one of the things they'll look at. Maybe they'll experiment with it in the NIT. I don't know. We'll start getting into more of those discussions of you know, brackets and who's going to which tournament next week, probably, and certainly the Monday after will be the selection Monday. What about the game tomorrow? Kyle, you think Kentucky could be in a little trouble?
I do, because Tyree is, I think, even quicker than Bone for Ole Miss. He's averaging 18 points a game. He's shooting 40% from three. He takes 5.5 threes a game. If they're not ready to defend on the perimeter, I mean, Ole Miss is more of a guard-oriented team. You pointed out off the air, they're sort of set up a little more like Auburn.
In terms of heavier runs,
that has been a pretty good matchup for Kentucky. But if you got a point guard who can get going and who can get by you, I think this is a game for Ashton Hagans and those perimeter guys that are going to have to step up. But if PJ keeps being defended the way he does, there are going to be open shots, and I don't think, you know, Tyler Herro and Keldon Johnson haven't both played bad consecutively very often, so I think at least one of them starts making some.
Curtis?
Yeah, I think Kentucky's Tyler Herro isn't going to shoot that bad again, I don't feel like. I mean, it just felt like things were going in such a right direction that game is just a blip on the radar.
I mean, he was shooting about close to 55% on the road in SEC.
Yeah, that's so. I mean, I think he'll come back from that, and that almost by itself will be able to kind of get Kentucky through this game, even without Reed Travis. And plus PJ, I think he'll be a little bit better, and probably will be a little bit more conscious of fouls and won't get in foul trouble in the first half.
But how much panic will swing through the state of Kentucky if
all
they
of
lose
it.
This game?
All of it.
Full blown meltdown. The Twitters.
Yeah, it would get to DEFCON probably. Three?
Yes.
Something like that?
I think at least.
Guys, thanks much. We'll be back next Monday to get into tournament mode, and we're under 2 weeks now until Selection Sunday, so fun time of year. Coming up tomorrow, I'll be in Oxford. Larry Vaught will join us, David Kellum from the Ole Miss Network, and Brian Bennett from The Athletic, also, who is their bracketologist, so we'll talk a little bracketing there. Donato Slice of Wildcat history this day. In 1978, Kentucky routs UNLV on Senior Day for Goose Givens, James Lee, Rick Roby, and Mike Phillips. And today was Mike Phillips' birthday. Rest in peace to the big fella who we lost much too soon a few years ago. See you tomorrow from Oxford on The Leach Report, served up by Wild Eggs.
Thanks for listening to The Leach Report. Make sure you check out the podcast page at TomLeachKY.com whenever you miss a show. And be sure to follow The Leach Report Facebook page. If you have a question for Tom, email it to LeachReport@gmail.com. See you next time.